Hello there, and welcome to the CB7 podcast. My name's Palm.
And I'm Andy.
And together, we are Chrono Passion 7. Hello and welcome to episode 22. This is our Watches and Wonders special. So we've been there. We've seen the hype. Does it live up to it? You're going to find out. But before we do that, you're probably wondering what watches we have on our wrists. Andy, what have you got on the wrist then?
So it's probably no surprise to what I am wearing. I'm wearing the Rolex Wonderblow 7, the Tropic Dial, which went on this amazing and incredible journey recently with us. So I'm loving it just as much as I was on day one, even after doing a full month of wearing it. So that's what I'm rocking. What did you go for today?
I have gone for Rolex Explorer 2 Polar Dial 216570. We went to Geneva. We saw all these amazing watches. I came home and I picked out this watch to put on, and I've had it on the wrist all week. And it's going to be hard to take this one off. So that's what I've got on the wrist.
Very nice choice.
Yeah. So, Andy, tell us about Watches and Wonders. Tell us about your journey there. What were you feeling? What happened? What was your day like? What was your morning like?
We do the classic, right? How it all felt. It felt kind of surreal because it was such a big build up to the event, as always. And we're talking, right? We have our group chats where we're speaking with good friends, and the hype's getting real. We're getting excited. We're starting to work out, you know, our predictions and everything. And then you panic, kind of buying. I was, at least, like, what do I need to wear? Do I have the right outfits? Do I have enough pairs of shoes? All these silly things, right? You just want to make sure you've got everything you need to get through that week. Yeah, the big day was there. I hardly slept. I did sleep a little bit, but not much. I don't know why we do this to ourselves, but we always seem to be like, let's get the earliest possible flight and make a full day out of it or something. I don't know why. We always just seem to end up doing that and regretting it somewhat.
It's so the cheapest flight, that's why.
Yeah, maybe. I don't even think it was that. I can't remember. It was a reason. We're like, we go to the hotel, we sleep a little bit, it'd be fine. And of course, that doesn't happen. And there's another story there, but we'll come to that a little bit later, right? Bright and early start, get to the airport. Everything really smooth, though, I've got to say. Got there 30 minutes ahead of schedule. So I was waiting for Palm for a good hour and a half or something. But I went to the classic place where I get the quiche and the coffee. So I can't complain too much. And that's it. I was eagerly awaiting your arrival to just kick off the trip. But how was it on your side?
Yeah, quite similar. Obviously, you can't really sleep much. I think I must have got about 3-4 hours sleep beforehand, packing, making sure I've got everything, the equipment. I think it was in the morning. I was like, damn, where's the microphone? You know, I packed everything, packed all my clothes, everything else. The main microphone, luckily, was on my desk. So I picked that up. Got into a cab because it was very early in the morning. It was chucking it down in London, absolutely pelting it down. So I was like, okay. Got to the airport. My flight wasn't delayed. It was a bit slow. It landed about half an hour after it should have. But there was no issues, nothing to worry about. Landed, and he's sitting standing around waiting. I think especially I've landed. And then I was actually at the back of the plane as well. So it took me another 20 minutes to get out. And then there was a bus, and they had to load that up. And then that took another 10. I thought it takes you about 5 minutes. And I don't know where this bus was going, but it took another 10 minutes on the connecting bus to get us to the terminal, to your arrivals terminal. After that, it was good. You see the Rolex clocks, the walking down the walkway and on the travelator, and then you see Vacheron Constantin adverts everywhere. You see Richard Mille. You see watch brand after watch brand. There's nothing else. They're not advertising anything else. You just think, right, yep, now I'm in Geneva Airport, because it's all about the watches. And that was just really cool. Met Andy, I had one of those quiches, which was...
Yeah, did it live up to the hype? I was bang on about that quiche. Did you like it? Was it all right?
It was all right.
It's all right.
It's as good as a quiche can be.
It's as good as a quiche can be.
It was. Yeah. I had to try it.
I think it's more the price. The price is, for Geneva, it's not so bad, right? And it's a bit of fuel to get you through the start of the day somewhat.
Yeah, it was good. It was all right. I mean, Geneva's airport's really nice. It's not chaos, which is good. And it's good to try it. And there we go. It's an institution with Andy to have his quiche and eat it.
Yeah, it's a ritual.
Yep. And then it was on to figuring out how we were going to get to a hotel. How are we going to get to a hotel in France via Germany? So we got to the train station. This is quite funny. We got to the train station and we were like, okay, which one do we want to get? All right. Okay. So we typed in the name of the town, get the tickets, get to the train. I mean, it was so smooth, such plain sailing. And then we're on the train and then we kind of thought, hang on, where are we going? This doesn't look like we're heading towards anywhere we need to be going to.
Yeah, we were getting further and further out.
Yeah, we were getting like, into the mountains.
The wrong direction. Yeah,
and lucky there was this lady who used to live near London, actually at a place that I know quite well. And she goes, oh, where are you guys going then? Because she obviously picked up on the London accent and the English accents. And we said, oh, we're going to this part of France. And she said, oh, okay, I think you should have changed somewhere. We go, why? Where's this going? She goes, you're going to Germany. So it's like, oh my gosh. Okay, so next stop, we got off the train. A really helpful guy at the station got us onto the right train, a very expensive diversion. And we ended up walking with all these bags full of clothes and equipment and just everything that we thought, you know, we need everything. We did take our whole house to Geneva because that's how hyped and excited we were. And got into the hotel, yep. Checked into the hotel, and you were quite taken by the owners, right, Andy?
They were great, yeah. The great owners. We soon built a rapport, right, with the guy being a watch collector. And I think, actually, they gave us a beer on the house, which was great, because it was a really nice day, actually, the day we arrived. And we had some plans for that morning, but obviously the time was lost with the little adventure we went on, as, I don't know, we seem to do this sometimes.
Luckily, we didn't plan too much in that time.
Yeah, we didn't, and we could reschedule everything anyway, yeah. So it was okay, the things what we did have planned. So then we just were like, you know what, it's day one, let's just sit in the like little garden or patio, if you like, of the hotel and have a cold one, which I think was a good choice after that journey.
Yeah, good choice. Got freshened up, got changed, got into some nice clothes. The Jacob & Co. party at the Four Seasons.
Was it Beau Rivage? No, it wasn't. We called him the Beau Rivage. Yeah. Yeah, we called him the Beau Rivage very quickly, but we're going to keep that for another EP. So we're going to keep some of the brands we saw for a separate one. Today we're going to focus more on the expo itself. But of course, being fans of Jacob, we were very lucky. We were invited to the Jacob party, and it was great, right? What more do you want? There was constant champagne going around, caviar, and a lot of great guests. We bumped into RJ from Fratello, for example. I am Caster. I think Munich Watch Collector was there. I don't think we managed to grab a minute with him, but he was around. Loads of people.
Loads of Instagram celebrities, yeah.
Instagrammers, yeah, Instagram celebrities, and probably more people than we actually knew as well. But yeah, it was really cool. Good vibe. And we were just out. We were speaking on the terrace for a while with I am Caster, right? Yeah. And then just the... We go back in, like, oh, let's get another drink, and it kind of ended somehow.
Just closed.
So we spent...
yeah, the curtain was drawn. Yeah, well, don't know what happened, yeah.
We're like, what happened there? A bit premature, but it was it was a great hospitality always by Jacob & Co. It was a great event. I think we got there a little bit late, so I think we missed a few of the speeches and stuff. But, yeah, it was great, and the whole setting was incredible, right? All the watches on display, all the glamorous... Girls, as always, adorned in all the jewellery, and yeah, it was quite impressive. A good way to start the trip, right?
Yeah, and it wasn't a too late a night, so that's always a good thing, seeing that we were in France.
Yeah, it was quite sensible for us. Yeah.
And there's a Uber problem as well going on in Geneva, allegedly, so it made the journey back to the hotel every day a little bit more difficult, yeah. And in as well.
A little more difficult.
Yeah. In
and a little
and
more
out,
tired.
Yeah.
And a little more stressed.
Yeah, so that was the first day. And then
it was time for the expo, right? We were doing half a day, I believe, at the expo, and then we had other appointments in the town, in the heart of Geneva. And it was absolutely chucking it down, right? It was raining so much.
So bad. Yeah, so we wanted to get a cab, and the owner was like, oh, you won't get an Uber from here. And luckily we got one, which set an expectation for the rest of the trip, which was false. And so we got a nice Tesla in on the first, you know, we were like, wow, this is plane sailing.
This is a breeze.
And then the owner as well was, we told him, we're like watch journalists, and he was like, okay. And he was so nice. He got his Deep Sea, his Rolex Sea Dweller Deep Sea out, and his Panerai, and he was showing us all his watches. He's like, yeah, I like these. And the Deep Sea, ironically, we'll come on to that a bit later, was featured quite heavily in the trip.
It really did.
Yeah, so we got in this car, and then we thought, right, no worries.
This is easy. Like, in hindsight, we didn't realize how lucky we were to get that Uber on such a horrible day. Like, it was heavy torrential rain all day, and we were so lucky that we had a Tesla Uber as well, a really nice car, just take us straight to the front of the expo. So that was extremely lucky for us. And yeah, that's it. We were there, right? We made it easy to get in to the expo. No issues. Our passes worked. Not sure why they wouldn't, but you always... Yeah.
You never know. Like, you're always panicking. Sorry, you're going on public days.
Yeah, last minute, like, you're not press.
But we flashed the podcast on Spotify to them and Apple Podcasts, and we won them all over. So went straight into the PAL Expo. It's a strange experience walking through, seeing it on social media and on the internet, and then to actually walk through it, seeing Watches and Wonders emblazoned all over the place, and seeing PAL Expo everywhere. And it was just it was quite, I wouldn't say daunting, because it's a really cool, busy yet not intimidating atmosphere. And it was just a different vibe. It was like walking into a gigantic mall full of watches. Full of watch brands. And it was just, you can't explain the feeling when you walk in that you're here. Okay, I'm here. And it was like, okay, that was just, again, very easy. And you stop and take a stock take. You take a little check yourself and you think, wow, we're actually here.
We made it here.
And this is Watches and Wonders. And it was quite bizarre.
Satisfying, I think, and very rewarding, because it was a lot of work, right, to get the moment to be in on those particular days, and just the realization that we made it happen and we were there and we were officially invited was a moment just to savor, I would say, especially walking in there. And as Pam was saying, you just see all the major brands like IWC, Jaeger LeCoultre. You know, then you see the huge Rolex and Tudor signs and Patek, and you're like, well, this is it. We're in the big time. We're in the biggest show in the world, right?
It's the big leagues, yeah.
The big leagues, yeah. And, you know, you turn around and you're like, isn't that so-and-so? You know, you've got all these huge media outlets just walking past you, right? And it's like, well, we're part of this now. We're actually living and breathing this.
It was something to take. You do walk in quite casually, and then you stop, and just as you absorb it, it kind of dawns upon you the magnitude of the situation.
Yeah, where you are and who you're with.
Yeah, seeing people as well walking past, and one thing as well, everyone is busy. Because you have allocated appointments on press days, you have to honor those. No one has time to really mingle and talk during, unless you've somehow managed to wangle an appointment with someone else, which is very rare. You're not going to have a chance to stop and talk to people that you know. It's just make your appointment, go to the next one, chill out for a little bit, don't miss lunch. It's complimentary champagne as well, but you can have a couple of glasses, and because the time factor is limited.
Like, if we forget, we've kind of led into the first day there, right? And then just to summarize the overall experience of the expo before we get into the brands, it's just, day one, you're kind of like excited, right? Your kid's in a sweet shop. And then all of a sudden you just turn on, it's some kind of business mode what comes on. You're like, okay, we're here to do a job. We're here to get as much coverage and as much experience as possible. And because when you first there, you see everybody just on a mission work. Why is everybody so, gosh, so focused, and then like towards the last days we were exactly like these people on this crazy mission, just power walking from one side to the other to get to an appointment. It's just, you have to.
I think it was day two, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you've got to zone out because you can't be distracted, you can't talk to other people because you've got, you, it's the courtesy, you've made an appointment. With Vacheron, for example, you can't be late. With Hublot, you can't be late. You can't be late for any of the brands. It's just out of respect. So you're just on a mission and you're going, like Martin, the resident gentleman of our show.
Martin Green.
There was one instance, yeah, he just walked straight past us, right, on a mission, and you're like, okay, he's busy. And then, you know, when he wasn't, of course, he's like, hey, guys. So it's, yeah, just everybody's there to absorb and get as much hands-on and information around all of these amazing watches. What are an exhibition, right? And that's it. Everybody's there to do a job, on press days at least, right?
So those are our first impressions and our journey. So let's get to the nitty-gritty and the biggest social media focus at Watches of Wonders, rightly so or wrongly so, is on Rolex and Tudor. We'll start with Rolex. What did you make of the novelties?
I liked the fact we got at least two of the predictions correct, right? So you predicted the Guinness on steel, yep. So nailed that. And we predicted the 1908 in platinum, so we nailed that as well. I loved the 1908. I'm just going to say that's probably my favorite release from Rolex. I just thought the Guilloche was absolutely gorgeous. And yeah, just an incredible piece. The Guinness, yeah, it's cool. That's all I've got to say, really. I'll be honest, it didn't get me super excited. And then, yeah, the Deep Sea is just bonkers, right? The 360 plus gram.
Yeah, the gold deep sea
is definitely a statement. Yeah. What did you think, though? What did you think to any of those releases? Which was the standout for you?
At first, I told the owner of the hotel that they've released a gold one, and he couldn't believe it. He started laughing. But to see it, it was insane. The actual size of it is crazy.
Humongous.
Yeah. The GMT was, for me, I thought it was quite an obvious choice. They went two-tone and full gold last time, and the grey and black. The green hand was obviously the surprise with it being all steel. It was okay. It's a GMT, and if you want all the GMTs, you'll go for the grey and black as well. Yeah, so with the old all-black dial and bezel, you know, this is very similar. It's just that the grey is added to it. The Perpetual 1908 was very, very nice. That dial was so well crafted. My favorite was the rose gold day date with this kind of fume, brownish dial, which transitioned really well in the light. And that for me was my pick. It wasn't not many people really focused on that.
Is that not the soft launch watch at the Oscars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah, for me, the 1908, that's good. I think the day date was beautiful as well. And that dial's just incredible on that.
Yeah, the rest of it, the diamond bezel Daytona and yada, yada, yada. I mean, it's not, it was there, they've done it. I think Rolex played it quite safe this year. This, the gold Deep Sea
was the curveball.
Was a surprise. It's not the surprise everyone wanted.
So, yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a bit of a oddball.
Yeah, it's like a surprise birthday present. You're really excited that you've got an additional present and you rip it open. You're like, oh, it's not quite what I was expecting. I found Rolex a little underwhelming. Like, everything's executed to excellence, of course, with Rolex. But, I mean, it's just like nothing to really get your teeth into to get hyped up over. But Tudor had some interesting releases. Which stood out to you over at Tudor?
Oh, there were two that really stood up. Well, they had three big ones, I'd say. The GMT Coke with the gilt accents was actually a really nice watch. Really cool. I was impressed with it. Because at that price, a travel watch with that quality, Metis certified as well, master chronometer. So that was undeniably probably the best, I would say my favorite budget watch of the whole event. And then the Black Bay 41 with the black dial and the Jubilee style. We can't say Jubilee because it's not Rolex. Jubilee style bracelet, which sounds like the most boring watch release. But when you see it, it actually works really well. And again, price point is incredible. And it just is. It was just something about, I don't know what it was. It just looked so good.
It had a Submariner kind of vibe to it, I thought, but on the Jubilee, which made it quite interesting.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's it. It kind of like you're getting a sub, but on the Jubilee, which you wouldn't get over at Rolex. And that's what Tudor's all about, right? It's kind of a funner, younger sibling of Rolex who are a bit more adventurous and do things a little bit different. I actually liked the gold Black Bay 58. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
I don't know if I liked the price. What is it, like 27k euros or something crazy?
27,000 pounds, I think.
Huge money. Yeah. Big money, or maybe 28k in euros or whatever. But I mean, I liked it. I thought it was really cool. Yeah, dedicated Tudor fan, if you're willing to pay that. When you look over at the Rolex camp for that price point, you can get some pretty nice pieces, for example. But I agree. I really like the Black Bay as well, the GMT. I thought that was a great release. I didn't know if it had a bit too much Fox Patina on there, which I maybe didn't love. But overall, it's got a cool retro vibe. People rather resonate with that look, or they'll prefer more of a cleaner modern look. But yeah, it's definitely a cool piece, and I think it'd be very popular.
It's very Tudor to do that.
Yeah.
That gilt, that faux patina. It just makes it look a bit more interesting.
Yeah, it does. It makes it look a bit more retro and cool. And yeah, I think it worked. But I can see is people on both sides of the camp on that. But yeah, our listeners can choose which side they fall upon. But yeah, it was really nice. In the flesh, it looked great. So they're like the heavy hitters, right? They're the big ones.
That was it, yeah, including the Black Bay 58 in all gold. Then moving on from that, we're going to just pick out some brands that we've got a lot of respect for and whose releases we were really impressed with. So the first of those is Moser & C. And Andy, what did you think of the Pioneer Center Seconds with the citrus green dial?
Good one. I thought it was quite crazy. It's definitely Moser in true form. They love to have fun with dials. As I've said before, I think Moser are like the king of dials, right? With the way they experiment. And they certainly did it this time with the citrus. It was fully Luminova as well, so the whole dial just glowed as well. You've got to be into the citrus colours. You've got to be into that vibe. I think it was a really cool summer watch, actually. Unfortunately, we couldn't try it on because it didn't have the buckle for whatever reason. So you kind of got the experience of it on the wrist, right? So I think it was Claire who was kind of pinching the strap, who was doing the presentation for
us. Well, I was
giving you
taking my photo.
Yeah, so at least you got a bit of a feel. How did you find that on the wrist?
It's good. Moser's, you can tell a lot of thought goes into the way they design things and the way they set out. They set out very on purpose, but it's not obvious. So it may look like a round watch, just a basic round watch, but it is just so well designed. The symmetry is incredible.
Yeah, they are very good. They had the Purity range in the past. I think it was like the Endeavor Purity. I remember they had these such clean, crisp, beautiful, pure-looking dials, hence the name. And you still see that DNA, like in the Pioneer with the citrus dial. It's that kind of makes a statement whilst being extremely, like you've said, everything's just perfectly balanced on the dial. Everything's well thought out, well executed. And I think that's the magic with Moser. They just seem to get it right every time.
Yeah, I do think it was quite bright. I don't think it could be everyone's cup of tea when you see it, because it's a very loud, alive kind of dial. What do you think of that?
Would you say it's a bit Marmite? Would you say it's a bit of a Marmite watch?
Definitely.
Yeah, it's, I think it can grow on you, but definitely you've got to be into that citrus color theme. Otherwise, you might find it a bit garish, a bit overwhelming. But yeah, look, that's Moser. They like to have fun. They like to break the mold. Dare to be different.
Exactly. And like the Oris did this ProPilot X Kermit, which was very loud as well and changes color. This is like that times 10.
Yeah, turn the volume to 10.
Yeah, exactly. Cranked up.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, it's cool. It's Moser. Everything they do is just like with a purpose, on purpose, and just very well thought out.
Yeah.
So that leads us on to some streamliners. And Andy, which was your favorite of the few we saw?
For me, there was a few. I know it's one. What was your favourite? So I'm going to leave that one to you. For me, it was the Streamliner in rose gold. It was a tourbillon and it had this jade dial, which was this really nice, rich kind of green. Not the crazy luminescent green of the Pioneer. Just to be clear, it had a more dark, rich kind of royal green. And it just resonated with me. I thought it was really beautiful on the wrist. I liked how it felt. It's a limited edition. Obviously, it's not a cheap watch, so it's not something I'm going to be buying anytime soon. But it was probably the one that had the most wrist time with me. I didn't really want to take it off. It was just something about it what I really, really enjoyed. So for me, that was my favorite Streamliner. But obviously, it's a bit more unconventional with it being a limited edition and quite crazy. But which was your favorite release of the Streamliners?
Mine was the Streamliner Smoked Salmon. And I'll tell you why. It was steel, but that salmon dials are a bit hit and miss for me. Some I like. It has to be the right shade. And this didn't even really look salmon. It's almost like a caramel and burnt caramel surrounding it. And when you play with the light, it just transitions into so many different colors. And I just thought this was so different. And it looks alive on your wrist. That's the thing. There's a lot of life to these dials. And check out our Instagram. All the watches we talk about will be on our Instagram. The show notes will be on IG. And it doesn't. The little clip we do show of me playing around with the light on it doesn't do it, because I had it on for about 5 minutes just going round and round and round because it was just so cool. This Streamliner is, I wouldn't say not a fan. I was never the biggest fan of the Streamliner, but this trip has really made me appreciate that watch so much more. I know it's their sports model and possibly to get everyone into the brand, but it's really, in its own right, I'm finding that it's just a really, really great piece.
Yeah, the Streamliner for me is, I've always been a fan of the Streamliner. I think you was always a little bit on the fence. I always liked the original chronograph Streamliners. I remember seeing it like going back a few years now, and I just remember seeing the movement. It blew me away, and I always loved the bracelet design. It just feels good. It feels right on the wrist somehow. And yeah, similar to you with the rose gold, I just didn't, you know, you go see some brands and you're like, yeah, that's cool. You get the shot, you get the wrist roll, and you hand it on to the next person next to you, right, in these sessions. With Moser, it's kind of, I don't want to take it. Do I have to take this off? Do I have to give it back? It's some kind of, yeah, some magic there, I think.
There's some watches where you see them, you wear them, you take a photo of them, and that's it, you're done. You're thinking, that's my experience complete. I do not require anything further from this. I've got the photo and I've got to wear it. But with these, they're very Moorish.
Yeah, that's a good way. You get kind of an emotional connection, which is a risk because emotion is what makes us buy these watches, right? So Moser are doing something.
Yeah. Bankrupts us. Yeah.
But doing something right. Well, one last thing, what I loved about Moser as well was the videos they were playing. It was like bringing their watches to life, right? So talking watches. And talking you through the movement, and yeah, some great tongue-in-cheek, right, as well with Edward. Like, it just shows you he's a cool guy, right? He can take a bit of a laugh. I'm trying to remember where it was with the watchers were talking when he wasn't there, and then I think he popped in the room and like, was that Edward? I heard he's really hard work or something like this. Like, just, yeah, high maintenance, or yeah, just the fact that he can, have a bit of a laugh like that just shows you how cool a guy he is, really, and such a forward-thinking brand, so fun and spontaneous and daring, yet there's an underlying kind of classic feel as well, I'd say. Something classic about the brand, due to its heritage, but pioneering and pushing forward at the same time, which is great to see and refreshing to see, I'd say. Yeah, that was Moser. Absolutely awesome brand. One of our favorites, I believe, at the show.
Yeah, and talking of heritage, next we're going to talk about Vacheron Constantin. I mean, a Trinity brand needs no introduction. Amazing sophistication, complicated watches, classy, just immaculately made. These watches are, this brand is something special. So they put out a range of overseas watches in rose gold. So there was a dual time, a three-hand time only, and a chronograph. So Andy, which of the three, I know we got to try them all on, but which of the three did you find the best?
For me, it was the overseas jewel time in the rose gold. Yeah, I really, really liked that piece. I know at first, I don't know if it was yourself or other people, maybe when we were speaking at the show, wasn't sure about the red hand against the green. And the more I've studied it, it's kind of this royal red, which goes with, I don't know. I just think it works. I really like it. I think I got you to take a shot, like a bit of a lifestyle shot with the blazer and the hanky and all of that, what I was wearing. And then when I looked at the picture, I'm like, my word, that just looks right. But that's the overseas in general as well. Just the overseas is such a hot watch. It's probably my favorite sports watch out there anyway, from especially from Holy Trinities. But yeah, that was a standout for me. Which was yours from the new overseas?
I liked the chronograph. The three-hander was cool because it's easy, it's simple. Again, it's such a well-made watch, the overseas. Integrated sports watch, you can't go wrong. But the chronograph was really cool on this one. And it's probably the largest of the three, but very well proportioned, very well made. So yeah, I would say that was probably the best one for me. Yeah. And then they did a titanium watch with a blue. I mean, their blue dials are legendary.
Yeah.
Second to none, I would say. And it had a tourbillon in it as well. So you've tried on these rose gold, heavy rose gold watches with a chronograph in them and a dual time complication. So they're quite heavy. And then you get a titanium tourbillon watch, which you almost throw up in the air as it comes into your hand because you're used to this big chunk of gold weighing you down. And it was phenomenal. Probably one of my favorites off the whole show, but definitely my favorite Vacheron from the novelties.
Yeah, it's tough. I did love the jewel time in rose gold. That really, I don't know what, it was just a vibe what I had with that. But as you said, just the blue dial on the new titanium overseas is just incredible. It just absolutely pops, glows, and then you just sucked into the tourbillon and it just looks fantastic. And it's so comfortable to wear as well. Like the gold is always fun, but it's not the most practical material, as titanium's a great material to wear. It makes the watch a lot more wearable, a lot more lighter, and a very difficult material to work with is like grade 5 titanium. It's very, very hard in the industry now, the class grade 5 titanium almost as a precious metal, because to machine it and to get the same finishing as they get from conventional precious metals is far more harder. So it's almost costing the same to produce these titanium pieces, hence the 170k price tag on this thing. But
worth every penny. Yeah, it costs a lot of money.
Yeah, if you've got the money, to be fair, it's probably worth every cent of it.
But it was also almost an irony to it in that it's a sports watch made from titanium, which is a very sporty material for its light and everyday wear. And it's a tourbillon in there as well, which is, I just found quite, were they having a bit of a laugh? But not a laugh, but they kind of just thinking, right, we can do anything we want because we are Vacheron and it'll work. And it did.
I just love Vacheron. I'm not saying it in any kind of biased way. It's just something about the brand what stays true to the heritage, but push forward as well. Like similar to Moser, I guess, is a common theme with the brands I like, are the brands what like to push things forward, but they don't lose touch with who they are, the original DNA of a brand. And I think that's VC, as arguably some other Trinity brands maybe do lose touch slightly with their heritage. But yeah, we got to try on some other great pieces, right? So we tried on the traditional tourbillon in rose gold. What did you think of that one?
It's a nice watch. When you've seen the overseas collection, the traditional is probably the DNA of Vacheron. There are other watches which they had, which we'll talk about, which we're going to talk about in a bit, that I found a bit more interesting and a bit more exciting. But it's Vacheron. It was incredible. It's a brand that stays true to the game. It knows who it is, and it has no identity crisis. And this traditional tourbillon rose gold just highlights that.
Yeah, 100%. Maybe it appealed to me a little bit more. So sorry, I said traditional, but it had that more of a vintage vibe to it. So maybe that resonated with me somewhat. The blued hands were just superb on that piece. And also it had a really nice kind of textured dial. It had like, I'm trying to think, like a frosting, that's the word I'm looking for, like a frosted dial as well, So it's all in the detail, but I can completely understand from your perspective, you being the more modern sports guy as well, you're going from these stunning overseas to something a bit more 100% pure classic. It's kind of a big change, big shift in what you were trying on before, right?
I don't think it was the look. I think it was just too big, because it was nice to get the big sports watches and then you got a big dress watch, but it was just like, I think it kind of got absorbed into the, because the other two we're going to talk about are very classic dress watches, but just a bit smaller. But this, I found this a bit too big, that's all. But Danny, and it isn't, sorry, it wasn't in rose gold, it's in white gold. So apologies for that, and I correct myself.
Oops. Okay. So maybe I said rose gold as well. So white gold. But hey, yeah, I got the name wrong anyway. Gold,
yeah.
There we go. So one all.
Right. Okay. So going into those smaller dressy pieces, there's a Patrimony which had this really beautiful blue strap. It looked alligator. It looked so classique. And the buckle, one thing I love about Vacheron is when they do a buckle, they've got the half Maltese cross on it as well, and then just seeing that in rose, this was in rose gold, so there's no need to correct ourselves with this one. But it was the simplest design. It was thin, it was flat, it sat on your wrist, it says Vacheron Constantin on it, so you know it's quality and class. And I just thought a simple watch with a beautiful gold kind of dial, I'd say almost gold colored dial.
It was sunburst, right? The dial, yeah, sunburst.
Sunburst gold, yeah.
Just classic, yeah. It's the best way to put it, yeah.
And that's something I would love to own, because I think it's not, maybe not realistic, as in because it's a high price point, but it's at a price point. If you want a classic dress watch, you could get a Patek classic dress watch, or you could get one of these. I would probably pick this one, like we've been banging on about. There's something about Vacheron that is very special.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think I could contribute much more to that. The Patrimony is just a beautiful range, rich in heritage, and they seem to manage, as I was saying before, to modernize it, but they don't go crazy. You know, they don't lose that touch. It's still got that very classic, just satisfying look to it. And it's just got that magic when you just read Vacheron on the dial. There's something about it what's just like, yeah, this is it. And there's very few watches what do that for me, one of which Rolex, another one would be Patek, and then the other would be VC. Just reading it on the dial gives some satisfaction, irrelevant of what actually which watch model it may be. Just seeing the name sometimes is satisfying.
Yep, I'd agree 100%. The final one from them was the Patrimony Retrograde, and it had a lovely green strap to match that blue strap from the other one, and in every way it was equally aesthetically pleasing and just stunning.
Yeah, very clean, very crisp, and yeah, just so comfortable to wear on the wrist. It just looked fantastic. Yeah.
And a moon phase on it as well.
And the moon phase,
just,
and retrograde.
One of my favorite complications.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got a lot going on. Yeah, I love retrograde. Such a fun. Especially, well, retrograde seconds is great on this. I believe it's retrograde minutes. But it's satisfying just to watch it click back, you know, when it hits that 60 mark. So Vacheron, I would say, is probably one of the strongest releases at the event. It definitely stole the show for us, and we regarded it as just hit release after release after release. There wasn't much to critique with the releases they did this year. I think it was very, very strong. And then another brand what was extremely strong was Chapec. And there's going to be a two-parter to this, because there was Xavier and we had a great time with him. We did a dedicated CEO interview with him. He's an absolute, you know, ball of energy and just a delight to be around. He's got such a great demeanor and energy around him, and it's contagious. It's just great fun, right, to be with.
Great warmth, great personality, just great fun, happy guy.
Very happy guy, yeah, just absolutely genuine, and I hope that's picked up. It's impossible that it's not picked up across the mics. He's just a legend, and we was extremely lucky to actually be, you know, introduced to each new novelty with the CEO of a brand, which is kind of surreal, but an excellent, what more do you want? You've got the visionary telling you about the watches he has released. Probably the most biggest statement from Chapec was the Promenade with the enamel dial, but it was an incredible piece and an absolute star of the show, I'd say, for Chapek, right?
Yeah, it had a like a swirling dial. It's a beautiful blue, almost royalish blue, and then transitioned into a swirly, lighter sky blue. But again, the colors transitioned as you got to the swirls. It's almost like you're being hypnotized. The way it swirls, if that was moving round and round, it's like you see on the cartoons where you're being hypnotized and your eyes, the swirly things appear in your eyes. It was quite mesmerizing as well, very hypnotic almost. Xavier was saying it represents a drop in water, and as that water spreads out, the ripples spread out, that's what that represented. So that was a very interesting concept. It was incredibly done.
Yeah, the enameling on that dial and the different tones running through it was just absolutely brilliant. And another detail, what Xavier said to us, was he wanted to make the watch accessible. So how do you make such an incredible enamel work of art? What goes through these six oven processes, you know, where you're putting it in the kiln or, you know, in the furnace six times, etc., to do each part of the enameling. You know, a lot of expense goes there, and then the failure rate, I think it's like 1 in 10 what actually makes the final cut per dial. How do you make that accessible for the customer? Then the way he did that was put in steel, which is quite rare for a brand to do that. When it's enamel, you'd normally go precious metal. But he's like, no, I want to make this affordable. And, you know, I don't remember exact a price. I think it was around 27K. And for an enamel dial of that level, I think it's executed brilliantly. And the finishing on the stainless steel is just superb. And the imagination, he basically said to us, and it being an interview, so I don't want to give too much away, but he just wanted to watch what instantly pulled you in and made you, I want this, you know, it just pulls you into the dial. And I certainly think he achieved that. And yeah, the Promenade was just a fantastic piece. I think that was definitely one of the stars of the show for Chapek.
Yeah. So just one thing, when I'm talking about Xavier and Andy's talking about Xavier, we are actually talking about the same person. He's saying it in the Spanish way and I'm saying it in the French way. So don't think we're talking about someone else.
Oh, right, yeah. I didn't even pick up on that. So then that leads to, you know, after the Promenade, as I say, was a real strong release for Chapek. Then there was a few new additions to the Antarctique, one of which was the rose gold with a beautiful blue dial. And I really, really liked that piece. And the others was the Antarctique with like a, it was like the purple dial with the weave style dial. But I think we've got to say probably the rose gold was the star, right?
It was. The Antarctique, again, is a, I'm imagining a series that is designed to bring people into the brand due to the popularity of sports integrated bracelet watches. And a rose gold with a blue dial are just, it's just something special about that combination. Gold and a nice blue dial anyway is a beautiful combination. And this one, I think, is very, very well done. And again, it's one of those ones that you don't want to take off when you try it on.
Yeah, it has a vibe to it. And it's recycled gold as well, which is quite interesting. So one thing as well, what you notice across the whole convention, you know, at the Palexpo and Watches and Wonders, is sustainability is a huge focus across all of these brands right now. And the way they're experimenting with new materials and trying to be more responsible, if you like, with how they upcycle materials, it's quite interesting. But there's definitely zero compromise on that rose gold. It looks absolutely fantastic. And then there was two other renditions of a Promenade with a blue and silver sunray dial, and very much like the droplet of water coming from the off-center seconds hand. Like on the enamel version of a Promenade, it was very much sun rays coming off the center seconds as well, which had an amazing effect, right, when you moved it in the light. But which was your favorite, the silver? There was two, right? The silver and the blue. I think the silver actually really popped for me. I really liked it.
Yeah, of the two, I think the Guilloche Soleil Blue Night is the name of the watch, was my favorite of the two. And so I found the blue, the nicer of the two. And again, the small seconds at 4 o'clock with the sun rays coming out give it a really good effect. It was very nice to sit with Xavier and for him to explain the vision of the dial, which is incredible when you think about it. It is the rays of the sun coming out of the small seconds sub-dial.
It worked perfectly as well as you moved it in the light. You could, it was like a laser. You could like moving a little laser around. You could almost make the light run around the dial like a sweeping seconds hand. It was that well finished. So yeah, home run, I think, for Chapek. Some great pieces and just, yeah, an absolute pleasure to spend time with Xavier. It was fantastic, right?
Yep. That moves us on to one of this podcast's favorite brands, Zenith. They released a few Defy models, this Watches and Wonders. At first, you may think, oh, what are they doing with a couple of them? And then some are just like, yeah, you get it straight away. But once you do understand the story behind these and why they've made them the way they have, you'll see why they did it. So, of those Defies, Andy, which one did you find the most agreeable?
So, I really like the Defy Extreme Diver on the nylon. So, it was the black dial configuration on the black nylon strap. Obviously, you can have it with a bracelet as well as different configurations. There's just something kind of James Bondy about it. I just thought it was really cool. And the way they've designed the bezel this time, so much work went into it. Like the way they've got like little notches around the bezel, right, where you can grip perfectly, and it just moved seamlessly. And then another technique they did was sandwiching the ceramic. So normally when you have a ceramic bezel, it's just a layer of ceramic on the metal. This was like a full piece of ceramic, which is like sandwiched between two layers of a bezel. And yeah, just constantly the innovation and design what Zenith are putting in. And of course, we had the opportunity to speak with Luke, who's the head of innovation and design for Zenith as well, who we're very fortunate to know quite well at this stage. He gave even more details around this, but yeah, it was just something about that for me. 42.5 millimeter is not normally the size I would wear. I'd probably prefer it around 40 millimeter, but the more I wore it, the more it started to grow on me. So yeah, of the new Extreme Divers from the Defy range, that was certainly the one what spoke to me.
So my favorite was the Zenith Defy Revival. Now, this could be quite polarizing because it has an orange bezel and an orange minute track. And I know when it was first shown on social media while we were out there, there were a few people scratching their heads thinking, what is this about then? Why have they done that? And then when speaking to Luke, speaking to Zenith and understanding why they did it, it's 37 millimeter, which is the classic size for the watch they released in 1969, the original Defy Revival. So it's an homage to that. It's a tip of the cap to this retro watch. And again, when you have it on your wrist, it makes sense. The orange pops completely against that black, and the black dial, it just goes, it matches it so well. It's difficult to say if you've only seen photographs. I would say if you ever get a chance to go and try one on, try it on, because the combination is really, really cool. It's different as well. It doesn't look like a retro design. It looks like a modern design. It looks like, okay, there's a lot of different colors going in here, which wouldn't have been done in the past. Orange is a big color for divers because it's the color that's most legible underwater. So once you start hearing about why it was done, how it was done, it just really does hit home at how good a watch this is. And one of my favorite watches is the Defy Revival with the red dial, and it has that Gayfrey bracelet. I wish this had that, but maybe it wouldn't have gone with a complete diver look rather than a kind of style icon, which I think the red one was.
You probably could get that as an option. It's probably I think it's a similar size. So who knows, maybe you could choose to have that bracelet, the Gayfrey, which would make a cool vibe.
Yeah, that's possible. Hopefully they do that, because I think the Gayfrey really does look good on a Zenith and on this particular Defy. There was one more, which was the Chrono, Defy Chrono Skyline, which you could get in two colors, in black and in white, as a larger watch in, was it 42.5, I believe?
Yep, or sounds
was this
about
larger?
Right, yeah, it was around the 42 millimeter mark on these two, yeah. They were more cleaner, more classic Defy Skyline styles, style IDs. So if you're a fan of the Skylines anyway, it's going to be quite a familiar territory. But obviously adding that chronograph feature could be, you know, a key selling point. Also, of course, it's got the 1/10 of a second. Goes without really saying at this stage, right, with these. That's the novelty with Zenith as well, and just the great El Primero movement, the power it has to able to achieve that very, very fast sweep. I particularly liked them. Out of the two, I'd probably say the white dial. Again, maybe a bit on the larger size for what I would normally go for as in preference, but I thought they looked great. But similar to you, I'd probably lean towards more of a revival or for my style and size, coming in at like 38mm, I believe, as the Skylines are just slightly bit too big for me, maybe, but really cool.
Yeah, it's nice in the white dial, I'd say. It's a safer option if you want to get something that will go with anything. I would say it's definitely one of those kind of watches where you don't have to worry about what you're wearing. The old classic, wear t-shirt and jeans, or you can t-shirt and shorts, or you could wear a suit. I think it's one of those watches, and it's a nice one. Zenith, again, a brand that's highly rated by people who know. That's what I would say.
I think that's a good way to put it. And just a few more last ones, right? We got to try the Chrono Sport in titanium, which Luke managed to steal from his manager somehow, like the big, big boss. And it was on the female's wrist, of course. And luckily, I've got a bit more of a girly wrist, so I could try it on. And it felt great on the wrist. It was nipping me a little bit, but it was so light, so comfortable. And again, you'll see all of these shots and see these watches in the recent reels we've posted and in the show notes as well. But yeah, did you like the titanium?
I got to handle it. I didn't get to try it on. It would have cut off my circulation if I had. But yeah, again, it was one of those, you're trying on these big steel watches, like especially after the Skyline. And then you get given this titanium watch and it's almost flies out of your hand because it's so light. But yeah, it's the Chronomaster Sport is classic, right? It is just a beautiful watch. And in the all titanium silvery kind of dial, normally the El Primeros will have the traditional three colored dials, but it works so well, and it's just a very good looking watch, and it's nice to see that one in the flesh, as they say. And I didn't get to try it on, but hey ho, I got to see it, I got to hold it, so yeah. I got the photo. So
it's something, right? At least, yeah. Getting to handle these watches is, yeah, a great experience. And then there was one last one, and I think this is a favorite for both of ours, right? The Chronomaster Original Triple Calendar in green, the boutique edition. Just class. Do we need to say much more? Just beautiful, right? Especially with that moon phase.
Beautiful. Yeah, and the moon phase, the triple calendar, the day, date, month. Beautiful green leather strap. It's just, and the size, I think it was 38. It's just so classic. Just, yeah. And Luke made a special effort to go and find it for us as well to show us. So that was again, such a top guy.
Yeah, he's a Luke is an absolute legend, right? Maybe joining us on the show sometime soon. Not just
if we're lucky, yes.
If we're lucky, yeah. If his managers over at Zenith listen to the podcast and don't think we're too crazy, then we might just get him on.
We'll get him on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was Zenith. Again, great releases and great triple calendar. And I think the Titanium Chronomaster came out in LVMH week earlier in the year. Good to see those as well. Good to see new watches.
So the next brand, unfortunately, we didn't get to schedule our appointment with just because they were so overbought. Because they're a huge brand, they're very hot lately as well, Cartier. So we only got to look at these pieces through the window, so we can't tell you the exact hands-on experience, unfortunately, this time, hopefully next year. But just a few standout pieces. What stuck out to us was, for example, the Privé Tour 2, the monopusher. I think, Pam, you'd agree, the biggest pain point here is they give the enthusiasts what they want, but also take it away at the same time. We've only been like 100 pieces released in platinum and gold. It's just... it's gone. The normal person is not getting that piece, unfortunately.
Yeah, and to put it's in an exclusive range, the Cartier Privé. And when I first saw the Tortue was out, I was like, wow, okay. So I thought that'd be out for everyone. And if you wanted it, you could get it. It's gone to more of a collector type crowd, I would say, and which is a shame because Cartier do a lot of revival stuff. They don't really make too many new models. So when they do revive something like this, it's a shame that it's not open to everyone. But yeah, that's my 2 cents on that one. One thing you can get, though, is the Sandoz de Cartier, and they did a dual time in a grey dial, grey sunburst dial, which is quite a nice little piece, and it's a great travel watch. What do you think on that one, Andy?
Yeah, I thought that was really cool and a little bit of a surprise. It was a bit more left of field. I wasn't quite expecting that from Cartier, so I was happy to see that. A really nice piece, I thought, in the metal, well, through the glass at least. And then another release was the new Santos.
In the glass.
Yeah, through the glass. Yeah, in the glass. Yeah, the Santos de Cartier, they introduced a new brown sunburst. I think that could be a bit of a Marmite dial. When you compare to like the green, what they did previously, I really liked the green. Is it as hot as the green? Maybe not, but it's Cartier, so it's still nice. It's still got a nice gradient to it, but brown, don't know, brown dial, don't get quite as excited.
It's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's collectors will get the white, the green, the blue, and the brown. I think it's kind of, people will go for it, but maybe not. It won't be as popular as the blue or the green, I don't think.
Yeah.
And one left of field piece they put out, which was quite surprising. I remember in the preview show, I said, oh, Cartier will just be putting out some lacquer dial Santos Dumonts. And they did, in a carnelian red color with gray indices, but it's got a nice little touch to it. It's called the Rewind. Andy, do you want to let everyone know what the little special complication is on this one?
It's all in the name, right? Everything's backwards. All the numerals are running backwards. All the hands are running backwards. So probably an absolute headache to tell the time on. But it's a great novelty, a great party piece. A good conversational piece. Like your watch is backwards. Everything's backwards on your watch.
Going backwards, yeah.
Yeah.
Backwards. Turning back time. There we go.
Yeah, time machine.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's fun.
H.G. Wells to be proud, yeah.
Yeah. I love it when, you know, quite prestigious brands, quite respected brands let the hair down a little bit. Like, I guess the previous year Rolex did that, right? With the puzzle dial and the emoji day date and celebration dial. It's just nice occasionally that brands just have a bit of fun. Keep it classy still, but just put a bit of spice in there. Put a bit of a curveball. Surprise people a little bit from time to time. And I think Cartier certainly did that with a Rewind. It's quite a crazy piece.
Right, talking of crazy, the next brand, Piaget, did probably the most crazy thin tourbillon watch that you can find with the Antiplano Ultimate Concept Tourbillon 150th anniversary. Now that's a bit of a mouthful of a name for the watch, but it is incredible on the wrist. It's wafer thin and it weighs nothing really. You put it on the wrist and you just don't feel it. Luckily we got hands on with it. Andy, I think you've got some more details on the width and the
not much more diameter. Totally agree with you on, first of all, it's as light as a feather. I think you said that, but it weighs I think the only weight you feel is a strap and the buckle, maybe. Extremely lightweight. And yeah, dimensions-wise, it's 2 millimeter, a 2 millimeter tourbillon movement, which is quite incredible. And just the finishing is superb. The movement is a work of art. Just when you get it in the right light, the whole dial kind of just pops. It's got a lot of detail in there, a lot of high quality finishing and polishing. It is just simply a superb piece. And we only had like 15 minutes with Piaget because we had an appointment with Hublot straight after. And you've got to run around. As we were saying at the beginning of the show, you're running everywhere. But I'm so glad we got to have at least a quick moment with it. And because who knows when you're going to get to try something like that again. But
yeah,
it was amazing. Insane. Yeah, just a marvel of engineering and beauty. I think they nailed it. Very, very nice piece.
Yeah, and talk about these. Sometimes you have to pinch yourself that you actually saw all this. It was just like, we were there, we saw it, we tried it on. We get to talk about it, we get to critique it,
It's nuts.
Give our views.
It's nuts when you think about it, yeah. And Piaget, I love Piaget as a brand historically as well. So just, yeah, to just even now thinking about it, that we were just sat there and you've just been really well explained these pieces. You know, you've got experts taking the time just to talk you through the watch and allow you to try it. And yeah, it really is a journalistic dream come true for us, I believe, the whole event. But maybe I'm going off there a little bit. But it's just the appreciation. You can't help but it just flows out when you're in reflection, right? But that was an incredible piece. Polo 79, I've got to jump to it. Polo 79, everybody probably knows I've always wanted the original Polo. I've always loved the original Piaget Polo. So the 79 was a big deal for me to try it on in 38. That was the main one I wanted to try on before we had to run to Hublot. And I finally got to try it on. I know my feelings. It's probably not a surprise, but maybe Palm's view on it, because Palm traditionally maybe wasn't a Piaget Polo guy of the vintage variety. But trying on the 79 in a more modern configuration at 38mm instead of like 34, how did you find it? I think you connected with it a little bit.
I was a fan. I remember the Tulsa King, Sylvester Stallone, wore one, a Piaget Polo in that. Maybe a few years ago, I wouldn't have looked at something like this. But yeah, it's a 1970s watch, right? It's a Saturday Night Fever watch. It's something John Travolta would wear in a white suit and a black shirt. But it's cool. It's kitsch. So yeah, big fan of this watch, because it takes you back to a certain time, and you can tell from its look and its design cues that this is definitely a revival watch, much like the Vacheron 222.
Yeah,
when they re-released that, it's 1970s vibes and an appreciation of the era.
Yeah, it was a different time for the brand as well. Piaget back then, I don't want to stray off, but they were really focused on delivering the most luxurious watch they could. And it's when they were competing, we have King Midas with Rolex, everybody's just trying to basically carve a watch out of gold in that era. It was all about a showing of wealth and a status, if you like, in that era. And maybe things have changed a little bit in these days, but it definitely lives up to the original. But at 38, even more gold in there, and a mechanical movement as well, I might add. The original was a quartz. So there's some nice engineering in the back there now as well. So a bit more animation and a beautifully finished movement. Then just really quickly, because the show's getting longer and longer, and it's going to be a bit of a marathon at this stage, but the Polo Date 150th was a new release as well, which goes back to the classic Polo. When I say classic, sorry, that's maybe confusing. Goes back to the modern iteration of the Polo, but it does have the classic dial inside. So it's a little nod to the past by having that kind of striped dial in there. I particularly liked it. I've never been a fan of the modern Polo.
It's basically an Aquanaut with the original Polo dial.
It's a good way to put it.
I think that's how you can sum that up.
Yeah.
And that takes us on to Panerai, who didn't have too many novelties, but one that did stand out was the submersible 44 Luna Rossa in titanium, and they did one, a ceramic version in Thai Ceramitech, basic ceramic mixed with titanium. And being a fan of the Luna Rossa from a previous show we did, I was happy to see this in submersible form. A nice watch. It's a good size. It's a Panerai. It's got Italian styling. It's a dive watch. It's all you need if you're a Panerai fan, I'd say, with the white dial. And in titanium, very stunning, very striking watch. And I think, Andy, you like the Ceramitech one, right?
No, I'm the same. I'm with you. Titanium, white dial. I loved it. Just the construction, the feel on the wrist. It felt great. I loved it, yeah. Yeah, not much from Panerai on that front, but what they did release were two very, very attractive pieces. Yeah, really liked them. But yeah, for me, I gravitated towards the white titanium as well.
And a brand that you wouldn't normally associate with watches, which you should, is Hermes. They are doing some incredible stuff with the 808. They did, I would say, my favorite complicated watch of the week was the Hermes Arceau Duc Atelier, which was a tourbillon with a minute repeater complication in it. Again, check out our Instagram. We've got a reel of the actual chiming on this watch with the tourbillon spinning at 12 o'clock and the horse heads, which represent the branding of Hermes, which is two horses and a cart. And it really does capture the brand so well. And I have to say, the crispness of those hammers, horse head shaped hammers striking the chime area, the fork, it was just incredible. As watch nerds go, the chiming watch is a big deal, and this is done superbly, done perfectly. I think it could compete with any minute repeater in terms of the quality of the sound and the striking of the hammers.
It sounded incredible. I'd say that's probably for me as well, the out of all the pieces we saw, at least in hand, probably the best complication I handled. Absolutely superbly finished. Details, attention, again, and just the balance of the dial. It was complicated yet clean, and the crispness of the chime was just, listen to the reel. It will talk a lot better and describe it a lot better just hearing it rather than us talking about it.
Everyone else going, bing, bing, yeah, exactly. Bing.
Yeah, just listen. Yeah, listen to the reel. Watch the reel. You completely understand what we're talking about. Just superb. And then, yeah, one last release from Hermes, which I wasn't sure, or we wasn't sure, maybe it was just me, I don't know. It's like a video, what you watch in a presentation, etc. And it definitely felt like the Hermes cut was targeted towards more of a female audience. Yeah, after speaking with the advisor afterwards, it turns out that was not the case. So, yeah, I tried on the cut very quickly. I think the reason why you jumped to female sizes, it was coming in at 36 by modern standards. That's a bit on the fence for some people, but I think it's very much a unisex watch. And yeah, it felt great. It felt sporty. You've got the crown between 1 and 2 o'clock, which makes it a little different. I thought it was a fun, fresh looking watch. Yeah, very clean, very crisp. If you're looking for a sporty Hermes, then that could be the one. But yeah, definitely the real star of the show was a minute repeater. Just, you know, superb, right?
The cut from the promotional materials, they do look like it's aimed at women, but at 36 millimeter. But I think it is unisex. You could get away with it if you wanted to. It's a nice looking watch. The actual back of it as well, if you look at the movement, the actual detailing is very nice. It's very, very stunning. And it's Hermes, so it's going to be quality and a lot of sophistication put into it as well. And again, the crown with the H on it at 130 is a nice touch. Just to give it a bit of, make it look a little bit different and sets it apart from the others. It's a nice watch. Would I buy one? Possibly not. 36 isn't really my thing. And if it was going to, I'd probably get a more dressier piece. It kind of goes a bit sporty. And yeah, 36 on a sports watch is probably a bit too small for myself. But there you go. Hermes doing great things. And our final brand, beginning with H as well, was an absolutely amazing experience, was with Hublot. They've released a few new watches here. So, Andy, do you want to talk us through this one?
Yeah, let's delve into the final brand for at least today's episode. Otherwise, it's going to be a marathon, if not already. So we tried on the new Big Bangs, the 38s in the King Gold. So there was a black dial variant and a blue dial variant. And I think just for me, the black, I'm a sucker for a black dial with any kind of gold. And I think because that day I was wearing like a black double-breasted blazer and a white shirt, it was just perfect for me to try on. And I think, Pam, you gravitated towards the blue dial because, again, what you were wearing just matched it so perfectly. So it felt great. You know, I had an original classic Hublot of the quartz variety, 36 millimeter in solid yellow gold, and just seeing where it's come to the modern iteration and standard. They're doing some great things, and I think Hublot is a brand you really have to consider seriously, like give them a chance, try on, you know, is a stigma, and we're not going to go into that around Hublot, but I don't think it's deserved. And I think the innovation, what they do with materials, with movements, they're doing some incredible things. And I think, Pam, you'd maybe like to explain one of your favorite pieces, which goes more into the DNA of Hublot and the fusion of materials.
Yes, so one watch which I didn't expect to like, I saw it in the watch box that they had and on the roll. I was like, okay, that looks a bit, you know, that doesn't look like something I would really gravitate towards. And then I tried it on and it was like, wow, this is actually really, really cool. And that was the Unico Magic Gold Square. It's called Magic Gold because it uses 24 karat gold and it's mixed with ceramic, giving a very brass-like but tough surface. And it looks amazing. And the way it's been done, it's a big square, so it's quite a big. I'm not a big watch fan, but the way it's done, it looks reminding me of some sort of dystopian novel that George Orwell wrote or something, that where the world's coming to an end, it's being controlled by this one big thing. And it's just, there's something about it, very industrial, very gritty, grimy, that kind of dark and grey vibe to it. And it was just really fun. And I couldn't stop looking at it. It was quite, when I was talking to the people there, they were kind of, they're probably thinking, what the hell is he going on about? But It was just something that, again, it's all very personal what you like about a watch. And that to me was, I think it was something very, very special. And in a way that I can't really explain.
It's bizarre how watches can sometimes speak to you, right? Because I would never choose that watch for you in a million years. I would never think that's a Palm watch, that's something you would like. And you was wearing it for ages. Like, you was just staring at it. So,
yeah, just looking at it, yeah.
It's funny,
the skeleton,
right?
Dial, maybe, yeah, as well. It was just, again, it was the industrial skeletonized. It was something about it that,
yeah, it was triggered
some,
yeah,
something, yeah,
yeah. And that's the beauty of watches, right? Sometimes, and look, that's the luck what we have, and you got to pinch yourself that we were so lucky to be there, just to be able to try all of these watches to realize actually this is a kind of watch what I'd maybe like. Which you'd never in a million years discover, you know, without trying it. But again, you don't have to go to Watches and Wonders. You just go to your Hublot boutique as well and experience, because honestly, the range what Hublot has is huge. And I think it's just something for everybody within their catalogue. Just to round up, one of my favorites was the Sample Bleu, which was a really crazy kind of, again, dystopian kind of thing, if you like, in how it looks, almost like... reminded me of something like from Alien movies or something, had this really sharp hexagonal kind of shapes to it, covered in diamonds, including the buckle. And again, check out the IG for that, but that was crazy. It was made by a Japanese jewelry designer. And here I go with my pronunciations. Palm's getting ready to do some editing. Takeshi Murakami, I believe it's pronounced. Yeah, maybe my Japanese is better than my French. Don't know which is harder. But yeah, it was a really cool design, really edgy, 42mm, quite cool. And then another piece what both myself and Palm got to try was the MP15, also designed by Takeshi. And it was the only watch, which, come on, how often do you get to try on an only watch from any other brand? So just to say we've tried on an only watch was quite a cool statement, right? Absolutely bizarre watch, really funky, but something really kind of cool about it as well.
Yeah, I think both of his watches, the Japanese designer, were very out there, very cool, very artistic. And again, that shows where Hublot are. They're not just going to stick to the basic, play it safe. They're going to do things that other people don't do, and they do it well. So, yeah, definitely. Again, trying on an only watch as well is something
a bonus.
Unique.
Yeah, we didn't expect.
Probably something we'll never do again. Yeah,
exactly.
Some nice memories there. But let's not end it there. There is one more watch that we saw in two different colors, and that was the Unico Big Bang in ceramic. And they did this in orange and in green. Again, check out the Instagram show notes to see all of these watches, and these ones were ceramic, but they had a very almost liquid texture. That's what I found when I tried it on. It was almost like it was melted plastic. It was just that very, or paint, when you open a tin of paint and you just see the fresh sheen of paint on the surface. And it was just, like I say, something liquid about it. So well done. Beautiful orange color. The green was very earthy, very dark, deep, moody. But the orange, I think, was the winner of the two. It just looked really, really cool.
Yeah, I don't know what it was about that orange. it just would, similar to you with the Unico, it was pulling me in. There was something what just gravitated me towards it. And I think you described it perfectly, like this liquid kind of fluid look to it. Hublot, the master of materials, the master of fusion. And I think we're doing some amazing things with materials, movements as well, in-house movements. They're doing some amazing work and definitely deserve a little more love, I would say.
I'd say so, definitely. And they look after you as well. They're just so charming company, and they're just a great brand to look at. One thing you realize is when you see these brands is you are welcomed, and people know that you're genuinely interested in the watches, and they genuinely want to show you them as well. So a nice brand, a brand that before this trip I was never a detractor of, but I'd never really looked at them too closely.
Yeah.
But after the experience, it was just like, wow, you do so many things. They do so much. That's the thing. Maybe that's why people are negative about them, because they do so many things and those people can't find what they want, because this amongst the, you know, there's a sea of different. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's creativity. They do things creatively. They don't just do the same thing. They don't just do a Royal Oak like AP would and just keep reinventing the wheel.
Yeah.
They do things, everything they do is different. And maybe some people just don't like that and just don't want to like that.
Yeah. The pushing the boundaries of different materials out of sapphire, ceramics, and also movement technologies as well. Like they have a weighted system in one of the pieces as well. So it's an automatic, but it uses weights instead of a rotor. It's just, they're constantly looking at new ways of innovation and moving forward. And I think they're quite an exciting brand to be around. And it's a little contagious when you're with them. It's quite exciting to see what they're doing. And yeah, maybe there's a bit more content coming with Hublot a little further down the line.
So yeah, fingers crossed. Hopefully, yeah. We'll, and one thing we haven't touched on yet is there's an MP11 power reserve with a 14-day power reserve. It's made from blue sapphire, and it's got a countdown of how many days. It's almost a bit Jacob-esque with the countdown.
Yeah.
It's just, again, these are things that maybe people don't know where Hublot sits, because it could be that really highly complicated fantasy world watches like MB&F and Jacob & Co.
Yeah.
And then you've got your more everyday big bangs, traditional watches, and I just think they cover everything. They cover it from top to tail, right?
Yeah, huge broad range. Yeah, that one was crazy. It had like for the 14-day power reserve, I think it was like 5 barrels in there, at least 4 to 5 barrels. Yeah, just insane.
And the colors, just the way they designed. I'm big on aesthetics, huge on aesthetics.
Yeah,
and just the color palettes they used and just complemented each other and everything. Okay. And the design is just amazing.
And it's all in-house, so they grow their own sapphire, which is crazy, and hopefully that's something we can see in person.
Right, and I think that covers the whole experience. We hope you've enjoyed it. Andy, what do you reckon? Final thoughts on Watches and Wonders.
Oh, my word. Exhausting, invigorating, exciting, incredible, mesmerizing, almost doesn't feel real, it's a dream come true. And all of that stuff. It's just a roller coaster, I think, is a good way to put it. A roller coaster of emotions and of energy and tiredness. I know why they serve champagne so much at the event, because it's fuel. It just literally keeps you going from brand to brand. But yeah, fantastic. I'm so grateful to be there and to have that press experience, because it's always been a joint dream of ours. And if you told me 8 months ago, I think it was when we started this podcast, that we would be invited as journalists at Watches and Wonders, I'd be like, yeah, come on, it's going to take a couple of years.
Lost your mind.
Yeah. So extremely grateful, extremely humbled. We do this for the genuine passion, you know, of watches, and we genuinely want to convey our experience to you, our listeners. That's what this is all about. So I really hope that does come across. We just want to share the passion.
Very well put there. Nice.
Thank you. But Pam, anything you'd like to add to summarize it?
To add to that, no. I think roller coaster was the right mode of transport. it was a rush. When it ended, it was like, well, that was quick. But it was like, wow, that's a relief, because I just want to go home now. And it's been nonstop. You're constantly on the move. You're networking. You're meeting great people. You're having an amazing time when you're there. You're doing things you wouldn't normally do. As newbies to this, to Watches and Wonders, we're doing things you've never done before every day. And you're talking to people. You're meeting new people. You're meeting old friends, albeit very briefly with both of them. But you're having a blast for the whole time that you are there. Okay, getting a cab or catching a train back to France every evening wasn't the greatest thing, but hey ho, we live and learn.
Hey, we're still doing the podcast. We didn't kill each other, so it's quite the testament.
Yeah, to we the didn't friendship. Close.
Yeah. close points where we're like, you're on the brink of exhaustion, right? We're just so tired, and there's bits at moments.
Yeah,
of
that's
frustration.
The
but the fact that we're still here going, you know, says that one to a good thing, I think. So if we can survive that, we can survive anything, I think, as a podcast.
You can survive anything as a podcast duo.
So don't worry, we're going now.
I'd recommend if you do go to the public days, maybe try and stay as close as you can. It seems like a good idea to save a bit of money, which is what we had to do. We're doing this all out of our own pockets and stay quite far out. But transportation backwards and forwards isn't always ideal, especially when you've had such a full-on day. You want that hour to yourself. You want that hotel room close by. We can drop your bag off. You can change. You're going out. You're wearing the same clothes all day long. And then you're going out and networking as well, wearing those same clothes. And it's just, it can be a bit much.
Like, if you are staying far out, make sure you've got some good aftershave in your backpack. That was our trick.
And some deodorant.
I remember we met Sophie, right, from Sophie's Watch World. And she was like, oh, you guys smell great. You smell all, you're all fresh. It's just aftershave.
Really?
Yeah. But we survived. Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Yeah, she was brilliant, though. Yeah. I got to meet some amazing people. We will talk about that in our next show, because we've taken enough of your time, we think. And we've got a Beau Rivage experience to talk about.
Time to
Four
watches.
Seasons.
Time to
what
watches.
Am I missing here, Andy Wells?
Gosh.
Time
honestly,
to watches.
We've networked like crazy. We've got some amazing contacts, as in terms of who will come on this show. And just saying that gives me goosebumps, because when you find out who we're going to have on, it's going to blow you away. So very, very grateful for this trip. Some amazing things happened. Stay tuned. We're only just warming up, I'd say.
We've only just begun. On that note, look out for part two. We have got a couple of interviews, shows lined up. Also, we don't want to give you 6 weeks of episodes on Watches and Wonders, so we will probably try and spread those out a little bit as well. But Andy, closing the show, what you got to say?
Well, other than Hasta Luego from Barcelona, I would add one little detail in, because we've covered so much in this show. Reference our Instagram. There is so much of the watches we've just discussed already in reels, so we might have to do show notes a little bit different in how we reference. So just keep a sharp eye on the IG. A lot of the discussed watches will be on there, let's say that, and we will put a show notes together, but to fit all of these in, it'd be impossible. So unless it's like 10 posts, so check out the reels that are already there. Per brand might be the better way of doing it, and we just add how to do that structure in the info there. So anyway, it's Hasta Luego from me. That is it. Until next time, it's been a pleasure as always.
And from London, it's Toodlepip and laters. And we'll see you, and you'll hear us, in the next one.